It's time to give your computer repair business website a much-needed makeover. Check out the new Tech Site Builder 2. Save 20% by going to techsitebuilder.com/Linux.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux the Rest of Us, episode 133. This is a show about Linux. We cover all sorts of Linux news, topics, hardware, software, anything that tickles our Linux fancy. I am Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Super Coop, a.k.a. the Ice Machine. Yeah, I'm using that nickname again. And I'm, of course, here every week with my good friend, Door Door Geek, a.k.a. Steve McLaughlin, the Linux Maven. How's it going, Door?
Good, in the sense our fans are being really nice.
They're always nice.
But I'm quite behind in publishing the shows. And instead of sending me emails saying, you know, I'm not going to listen to your show anymore, I'm going to unsubscribe, what's wrong with you? The only emails I've gotten is everything okay? kind of email. So I'm going to make it a priority higher than bacon to get the shows published out here ASAP.
Dora, I have to remind you what Steve Jobs always said and what you say, how you spread that out throughout the universe. Under promise, over deliver.
I know, but
when it comes to bacon,
once
man,
in a while,
come on.
I know, but once in a while, you got to put yourself on the line. You know, you got to keep it real.
Okay. Well, I
if not, you're just keeping it wrong.
That's true. Well, it's not like there are other Linux podcasts out there for people to listen to anyway, or that we would have a host of one of these shows as a third guest this evening anyway, so it's not even a big deal.
I don't know of any. I can't think of any. Oh, wait. No. No, I don't.
Well, unbeknownst to you, guest host, will you remove the hood from your head? Oh, look who it is. It's Mark Cockrell from Everyday Linux in anticipation of said thing from Door that he just said about other Linux podcasts. How's it going, Mark?
You know, I always thought that ours was the only Linux podcast. I didn't know that you guys existed. So, you know, it's worlds colliding all over the place. I'm doing great, guys. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, I can only relate the surprise to, you know, like if your dad was a traveling salesman and you're like, whoa, hey, I got a brother. And then like I have all these other brothers all throughout the country. It's kind of like that. And I'm glad.
I'm sorry. Did you just call me the bastard child of Linux? Is that what you just did?
No. Mark, I heard this about you, that you spin everything negative. I tried to give you the benefit of the doubt. You're only living up to your horrible reputation. I only wanted to say that you're my brother in this Linux journey,
okay.
And now that we're here face-to-face, I love you and miss you, and quite frankly, I want to play catch.
I'm looking forward to Thanksgiving with you, Cody.
Okay, good. Fantastic.
Wow.
Don't worry, with your negative attitude, you can just stay home.
Somebody better.
He's got to edit shows anyway.
Because this party's getting a little busy.
Okay.
I got to say, Mark, period, thank you for coming out. I will say this even publicly. I felt like a schmuck. And because I've just got done watching America's Secret Slang, go look at the real definition of that. I just insulted myself. But one-ups, I was a putz. Mark had me on his show at least twice. And last week, or like 2 weeks ago, I realized I was listening to his cast, and I never once asked him or any of his co-hosts to ever be on an episode of Linux for the Rest of Us. So I just feel like I owe him. This is a belated guest spinship thing.
Well, Dora, I was deeply wounded about that, but after months of intensive therapy, I've learned to come to grips with it, and I've forgiven you, so it's okay.
Well, if it helps, I can ship you
bacon.
Smoked bacon. Yeah, and maybe an extra part for your electronic smoker that almost burnt down your new house. I can send you a new piece to that, and hopefully it won't burn down your house.
Yeah, that has been retired to the municipal dump.
You should have had at least a corner of your shed devoted to it. Had at least a piece there.
I don't know. Smoker 2.0 will be born. It will happen. Okay. Franken smoker will exist, but just not right now.
Very cool. I got to ask you, Mark, to everyone listening to this podcast, they've heard me in the past. I try to mention a lot of other podcasts. I feel like I kind of go too far mentioning other shows. If they find something better than me and listen to that, so be it. They're better off for it. I want you to tell everyone what is Everyday Linux, who's on it, and how do you see that podcast fitting into people's idea of Linux?
Well, Everyday Linux, which you can find over at elementop.com, it's unique in the world in that it's the only Linux podcast in the world that's not about Linux. In fact, we often get feedback. You know, when are you actually going to mention Linux? We talk about Android a lot. We talk about Windows a lot. We talk about networking a lot. And every now and then, oh yeah, this is a Linux show. Maybe we should do some Linux. The idea came initially about 3 years ago, and I had this idea of we're going to take a panel of newbies and pros, and we're just going to talk about living with Linux, the good stuff and the bad stuff. We're going to, you know, lay the wizened, ugly parts on the table and stop hiding it and pretending that because it's open source, everything is grand. And also we're going to talk about the fact that because it's open source, everything is grand. And we're just going to be honest about it. And so I would say, if nothing else, if there was one word that summed it up, honesty is it. If we like something, we rave about it. If we hate something, we excoriate it. And mostly we just have a good time. So I have two other co-hosts. Currently, Chris, the command line godfather Neves, and Seth, the gooey kid Anderson, and I sit somewhere in between them. They constantly wage their battle between the gooey and the command line, and I try to speak for the listener. That's my role on the show. I'm sort of an accidental Linux user, and it's just a show where we talk about technology in general and what's going on in our lives as Linux users, as people who live with this thing. So it's not necessarily aimed at the newbie, but we try to be newbie friendly, and it's not aimed at the expert, but we hope to have some nuggets out there that experts could find useful too. So that is, in a nutshell, Everyday Linux.
Very cool. Yeah, I can say I've listened to the last few episodes in the last couple days in anticipation of your appearance, and I can say that in at least those episodes, there are three huge recurring themes that I see, or hear, rather. One, a lot of Unity hate, or discussion toward the negative, I'll say. The same goes for Windows 8, the second. And then the third, a lot of people getting hit by buses.
Well, I coined the phrase a couple of years ago, the tabletification of the OS. And everybody's moving that way. Windows is moving that way. Apple is moving that way. And sadly, Ubuntu, I'm not going to slap all of the Linux world with that, but Ubuntu is moving that way. And for those of us who still believe that the actual computer is the way to go, it's more than a little frustrating. And so that's where the Unity hate comes from. It's not that we hate the idea of a Unity. We hate the execution of it. It was released before it was ready, and we're, you know, people are saddled with it, and it's got issues.
Yeah, and trust me, that wasn't an attack on you or your right. host whatsoever. But ultimately, a lot of people share the same opinion that you do, and I've spoken to this before. It's always good to hear other people's perspectives, or at least their opinions on them, and then because a lot of our listeners, and I'm sure a lot of yours too, don't have the privilege like going to a lug and being able to sort of vent about their Linux frustrations or their Windows frustrations. So that's what I loved listening to these podcasts in the beginning, was to sort of have that camaraderie. One of the things that your show pulls off that some don't, I'm not going to name names, but it's like I'm sitting there right with the three of you. And I'm part of it. And it really, really sort of, you know, sucks me in, and it gets me feeling like I'm really involved in everything that you're talking about. So if you guys haven't listened to it before, definitely check it out. It is a great show.
That's my approach to podcasting in general. Sorry, Dora, to cut you off there. The idea is I'm having a conversation, and I invite the listener into that conversation. I am not a sage on the stage. I'm not preaching at you. I'm not, giving you marching orders. I'm inviting you in to be a part of the conversation. That's why we love it when people join us live, why we put a lot of effort into reading feedback. The whole idea of podcasting in general is to extend your conversations with the rest of the world. At least that's the way I approach it.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I definitely feel like, you guys are just sitting around having a chat, and As many times as I've asked Chris to get me a beer, he just never brings me one. So I guess I'm not part of that conversation.
He's a little hard of hearing sometimes.
He is. But I'll say, I think I've also said very plainly and clearly, Unity sucks. And that's an opinion. It's not fact. But I will say,
that's a fact.
Well, here's one of the things I think that drive it towards failure. I never really thought of this, but I don't know of another distribution, except for Mint, that quote-unquote creates its own interface. SUSE doesn't make a SUSE desktop. They use somebody else's. Fedora uses somebody else's. Debian, I mean, they all use somebody else's. So you get other people's opinions, beliefs, and judgments working together in a operating system. And with Ubuntu, you don't. You get the corporate stance, if you will. And that's one of the things that just drives me absolutely up a wall. And besides the fact, it wants 3D acceleration and it weighs a ton.
Right.
Yeah.
Honestly, none of that would bother me if it worked. The fact that it doesn't work is what bothers me.
I don't think I would like it anyway. Just because you said, like, the tablification of it, I don't like the amount of work it takes to use it. And that's my biggest gripe about a lot of desktops these days. They just seem like they require a lot of work just for them.
Mm-hmm. I think that I would feel a little more anger toward it if it was the only option, which it isn't. And it's almost, if you take a step back and really look at it, well, it's their product. They're going to do what they want to do with it. So if you don't like it, don't use it. But but valuable discussions come from talking about the pros and cons of certain, you know, updated features or lack thereof.
Right. Well, super quick question, Mark, which is not really a super quick question. Doesn't make any sense why I said that. But about how long have you been aware of Linux? When did you first start to use Linux, and what were the reasons behind it?
Well, my background comes from the world of public education IT. I did that for 15 years until just recently changing occupations, moving into the healthcare industry. And Linux was sort of this black art thing that the seventh level wizards with the neck beards used. And I was vaguely aware of it. but a situation arose where I needed a tool and I didn't have any money for it. What happened was in 98, 99, somewhere around there, the federal government passed a law that said if you take federal money for a school, you have to filter your internet. Back then, the internet was just barely even a thing, right? So we had internet access, but it wasn't filtered. So I started looking at options, and there were many options out there, all of which were terrible and all of which were expensive. And then I heard of a thing called Dan's Guardian, which is free to education, not free in general, but free to education, and runs on this thing called Linux. So I typed into, I think, Alta Vista. That's how long ago it was. I typed in, you know, what is Linux? And naturally, I was directed to Red Hat, and I downloaded, I think, Red Hat 8 or 9. It was just before they went to Fedora. I think it was 9 where they went to Fedora, so it would have been 8. It was the last version before Red Hat Enterprise Linux. I downloaded that, and I spent about 3 days trying to get the dang thing to boot. But, you know, being the consummate geek that I am, at that point it became a personal challenge. My wife says that about me, you know, when I get involved in something. She says, it's personal now, isn't it? This isn't about making it work. This is about dominating it. And that's where I was. It's like, I'm going to figure this thing out. So about 3 days to get it to boot, another couple of days to get Dan's Guardian configured with SquidGuard and working. And so a week of my time, I had a content filter up that was, I think, ran on that same box for about 7 years with only a couple of reboots in between. And that got me hooked. And then I turned I went down the rabbit hole that way. And so I used Linux in the server room all over the place. Over 15 years, I used dozens of servers, and it was, you know, it was my go-to. I kind of got mad when I had to install something that ran on a Windows server. I wanted everything on Linux. I ran in my NT domain at the time on a Linux box using Samba, I did all that sort of stuff. And so one day, somebody challenged me, you use this thing at work on the server, but you don't use it on your desktop. You use your Windows on your desktop, on your laptop, on your personal stuff. Why don't you see if, you know, if what's good for the goose is good for the gander? So I did what I called the Ubuntu experiment. I did for 18 months. I ran only Ubuntu on every machine I personally controlled. I didn't touch my wife's machine because I like my wife. I like being married. So I ran that, and at the end of the 18 months, I came to this conclusion. There's no difference between them. Windows is not better than Linux. Linux is not better than Windows. They are better at some things, but overall, they're parity. They're at parity, and that has been my stance ever since. And so I use them interchangeably. I float back and forth between different Linux distributions and different versions of Windows. They're fine. And people often like to talk about the fact that Linux is free, and I'm all for that. But realistically, Windows is free too. It comes with the machine. You know, nobody pays for Windows. They buy a machine, it comes with Windows on it. So I don't even count that part. The issue is, does it work? Can I do my stuff every day? And after the end of 18 months, I found out, sure. I totally can. Right. And so that was my story.
So your first run-in with Linux was the Boris Box, as you put it.
An early version of the Boris Box.
Very cool. And that is a very repetitive saying on everyday Linux. It's the because it's just the box that you have to respect or you don't get any internet access.
Episode 39 of Everyday Linux, we introduced the Boris Box. It's a funny story. Go listen to it.
Very cool. Yeah, and I'll say most people don't go from the server to the desktop. I think most people go from the desktop to the server. Right. So I think you have a unique intro to the Linux OS, and I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I was one of those people that Linux was for work and Windows was for play. And often people look at it, you know, the other way around. If you want real work done, you got to do that on Windows. Linux is fine for playing around. I had totally the opposite experience. Linux was for work. Windows was for play. Now I use them both fairly interchangeably.
Yeah, you shouldn't, and we've spoken about this before too, and it still just rings true. You know, you might as well use the tool that's going to suit your task.
Right.
You know, but at least, you know, it sounds like you've investigated your options and tried to do it, you know, on one platform or another by being able to take from several to get your stuff done. There's nothing wrong with that at all.
Yeah, I get grief for the fact that the entirety of the Everyday Linux podcast is recorded, produced, and published on Windows boxes. Because that's just what I happened to have at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not going to go out of my way to install Linux on something when I don't need to. And that's what's unique, I think, about our show, is that's the stance we take. It's there, it's good, use it, great, but we're not militant about it. And so, yeah, it's a Linux show that is done entirely on Windows.
Yeah, and I'll say the hardest thing I think for anybody to do is to completely overhaul a workflow. It's one thing to learn how to do something. It's another thing to completely change how things are done right now, and that's where I don't blame someone. If you're using something, if you're comfortable with it, don't. There's no reason to change.
Yeah, the laptop I'm using right now is an Asus laptop with a. It's one of the Republic of Gamers series of Asus.
Nice.
Excellent laptop.
Mm-hmm.
Ubuntu, when I bought this laptop, didn't have audio drivers for it. Audio is fairly important for what I do.
What?
So it's got Windows 7 on it, and I've just never seen any reason to go back. The next laptop I buy, I'll put Linux on it, see how it goes. If it doesn't work, I'll go back to the Windows. So that's why I'm talking to you right now, yes, on the Linux for the Rest of Us podcast from a Windows machine.
Well, it happens. Well, but here's what I will say. Not only are you doing that, but you're admitting it, and I applaud you. I would applaud you now, but my hands are too close to my mic. But
admitting your problem is the first step to
resolve. That's right. Yes. Well, as kind of an extension of Doris's question, really quick, what in your day to day, aside from whatever you do for education, are you utilizing Linux or other open source at home? And if so, what tools do you find yourself using the most?
My primary Linux experience at home right now is in fact the Boris box. The Boris box is the internet gateway, the firewall. It's actually, I love telling the story because it really emphasizes some of the beautiful things about Linux. It is a circa 1998 laptop.
Nice.
That has been running since 1998. It originally came with Windows 98 installed on it. Okay, that's how old this thing is.
Wow.
And right now it's running a Linux spin called IPCOP, which is a firewall content filter unified threat matrix device. It has, I'm going to get these wrong, but it's pretty close, 512 megs of RAM, a 20 gig hard drive, a gig, not terabytes, not 200, 20 gig hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
No USB 2.0 support, even USB 1.0 ports. I'm using the built-in Silicon Systems SIS 900 NIC that came with it, and a PCMCIA slide-in NIC.
Nice.
On the other side.
Nice. I was about to ask you if you used any sort of cards. That's all rad. Oh, that's so rad. I had an old PowerBook,
and that sucker has been running roughly 24/7 for more than a decade, and it still runs.
See, that's cool. And I'm going to go back and I'm going to listen to episode 39, trust me. And you had referenced it on 93 as well to go back and listen, which is odd. You know, it's kind of 93, 39. But anyway, that aside, it's wonderful what you can do with those PCI, MCIA cards.
Yes.
And I have an old... go ahead.
The PC... I'm on my second PC card, all right? So it burned out. It was just a decade old. You got to give it a break, right? So I spent 3 days and about $100 buying a new PCMCI net when I could have gone and bought, you know, a little Netgear box for $30.
Nope.
But no, I was not going to let Boris die.
Right.
Boris had to live.
Right. Yeah, I bought an old PowerBook G3, a Wall Street, at a local computer recycle center for like $30. And it had almost half the entire LCD was dead, and there were missing keys. And I probably over the last 4 or 5 years, I probably poured about $400 into this thing with different PCI cards and replacing the keyboard and taking the monitor off and running video externally, just because I could do it. But once you own a machine, or if you get a classic machine that really liked, kind of the situation where you have, you can't. It's such a part of everything that you do. Like you will. Yes. But just like you said, you could have bought the Netgear, but no, you had to buy a new card. And I completely understand that, just beyond anything. Yeah.
Now, with that, we also have our home theater PC is running. Actually, we have two of them. One runs Windows, one runs Linux, which is great. They share the same library. They don't care. They run XBMC, both of them, and XBMC doesn't care. There's a version for each, and the interface is the same for both of them. I have a couple of laptops, old machines that are still hanging around, but our everyday workflow machines, the family desktop, the family laptop, and the stuff I work with are Windows. And so it's still, I'm still in my sort of element of Linux is for work and Windows is for play.
Okay. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I had heard on some of your recent episodes, you talked about some other podcasts that you're involved in.
The Element OP Network began as one show, the Tightwad Tech, and it was a show about education technology. My coworker, Sean, he came to work for me, and he said, you know what you're doing here? Literally nobody does. No, nobody does what you're doing. And we need to tell people about it. And I was telling Doe before we started recording, it's not in my nature to blow my own whistle, to toot my own horn. It's just not how I do. I do things quietly. I do it in the background. If somebody else notices, great. If not, I'm not going to draw attention to it. So he said, you know, you need to do a podcast. He was a podcast listener. I was aware of podcasts. He was an avid podcast listener. He said, we need to do a podcast. And for about 8 months, he badgered me, literally every day, badgered me until I said, fine, I'll do a podcast. A year later, I was doing 6 shows and had my own network and was going that way. Once I decide to do something, I dive in head first. So over the course of about 3 years, I have done a total of 9 different shows. There are currently 6 active on the website, but at the moment, there's only one that I'm actually doing every week, and that's Everyday Linux. And as you guys know, Dor, I'm sure you can attest to this, keeping a co-host is the hardest part about running a podcast. You can be there every day, and you can do all the production and all that, but it takes a lot of work and a lot of time, and you don't get much back for it. So over the course of time, I've run out of hosts. So right now, Everyday Linux is the only show I do, but there's still a big catalog of stuff I'm really proud of out there right now. I did a podcast called The Art of Podcasting with Steve Cherubino. I think the listeners of this show might know that name. And James Messer of ProfessorMesser.com. We did 29 episodes that I think are outstanding episodes, and they, you know, just ran out of time for it. I did the Tightwad Tech, ran for 130-something episodes. And just recently died. And you know, I'm not going to go through all of it. Just go to Element OP. That's Element as in the periodic table of elements, OP as in OP Taylor. And check it out there, elementop.com. And I know your fans are wondering, or somebody out there is listening, what is Element OP? It's a play on words, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, A, K, J, K, L, M, N, O, P.
Oh.
Element OP.
Oh, man, I got to tell you, that peek behind the curtain was pretty bright. I don't know if my brain could take it. That is very cool.
It's a joke that nobody gets. I'm the only one who gets it, and I'm okay with that.
Well, I can respect that even further because of how I say the alphabet backwards on occasion, and doing it forwards and backwards, it's a little verbal trick. Yeah, so, yeah. Well, thank you for that peek behind the curtain.
Yeah, very cool. I will say, there was a point where I didn't care what you were talking about. I listened to anything just because it was there. Art of Podcasting, if anyone wants to get into podcasting and you want to hear basically, like he said, about Everyday Linux, people talking very honestly about what it takes to do a podcast right, the tools, the tips, the techniques, the software, the hardware, the tactics. You guys really did cover basically everything beginning to end.
And my goal with that one is I wanted to go out and find guys smarter than me and interview them every week. And that was the goal. So that's what I like to do. I think it's what I do best. I can pontificate, as you've certainly seen over the last 20 minutes or so. You wind me up, I can certainly go. But I think what I really prefer to do is interview smart people. And so I went out and found some of the smartest people I could and picked their brain for, you know, 6 months.
Very cool. I wanted to ask you a quick question about who are the current two co-hosts on Everyday Linux with a really quick. Yeah, I think one of the hardest things about podcasting is not podcasting. It is the timing of everyone to be available at the right time to do a podcast and to actually be ready to do it.
Right.
When it's just two people, it's much easier. And once you add that third person, you literally make it much more complex. But I really do think what you have right now is a very good combination. Everybody just gets the flow. They get along. They end each other's sentences. Exactly. Now, I wanted to make sure everyone at least heard this. Chris is the command line godfather, but I think in some ways, more importantly, he is a Fedora ambassador.
Indeed.
Oh, okay.
The people who've listened to this show know my feelings about Fedora. But what I will also make clear is I utterly respect what Fedora means to Linux. Without Fedora, a lot of things would be advancing at a much, much slower rate. So Fedora literally sticks its hand into the fan at times to advance everyone. Can you tell us how you see a Fedora ambassador and what it means to be that?
Well, my understanding of it is a Fedora ambassador is somebody who has gone through a very limited certification process of sorts. It may just be pinky swearing. I'm not really sure what it is, but there's some process by which the role of Fedora ambassador was conferred upon him. And he's basically said that I'm going to spread the word in a positive way about Fedora in every way possible. Fedora ambassadors are often the hub of certain Linux user groups or That sort of thing. And that's sort of their job. And he's a big fan of Fedora. Absolutely. He makes that, well known. It is his beloved distro of choice. But what I like about, and I'm going to interrupt my story here and say, one of the things I've said often on the show, and it may be offensive to people, but I'm going to say it anyway. Sometimes the biggest single detriment to the Linux community is in fact the Linux community.
Linux community. Yeah.
Because you a newbie will come in and totally get excoriated for being a newbie, and that's just not okay. And so Chris, to pick up the story, even though he's a diehard Fedora person, he's totally open to other things, other distributions. He will try them. Of course, the Fedora is the standard by which he compares everything, and that's great. But he's very open to new ideas and very open to new users. And that's why you said, you know, we've got a good group of people there. I handpicked each one of those people. If you go back to episode one of the show, episode one was actually an episode of the Taiwan Tech. So we sort of used that to launch the show. It was an entirely different cast of people. And we did five shows. Four and a half of them sucked. And I said, this isn't going to work. Stop. Nobody show up to work tomorrow. And we took a 2-month break while I went out and I found new hosts. I handpicked those guys and I changed the direction of the show. And from then on, I think it's been really good. So yeah, finding a host, is very important. And, I think it's important also to admit when you haven't found a good host.
Yes. Ripping the Band-Aid can be painful. Some people option not to do that. And I will say it takes a big man to do that. And I'll say, that is the thing I like about Chris most of all. It's obvious he's pro Fedora, but at the same token, I've heard him speak very honestly about it. Other Fedora ambassadors I've heard, let's just say they're like lemmings. They will just blindly say how fantastic it is and you're an idiot if you don't run it kind of attitude, where Chris is very level-headed about it.
And I think the word that you use to describe him there is perfect. He's a pro. Yeah. And his chops are evident when you listen to him speak. This is a guy who knows his stuff. He practices what he preaches. He lives this thing every day. He, like I used to be as an education, technician, works for a school district, but also he runs his own business, as I know is near and dear to the Podnuts Network. But he's a real, pro, and he's sort of like E.F. Hutton. When he speaks, people listen because he has earned that right. He's earned that level of respect by being genuine and knowing his stuff.
Yeah, but I will say I love when the episode starts and you can hear the disdain in his voice for Windows because there was something he had to work on the past week that just drove him nuts.
I think it's his teeth gnashing was what I'm hearing.
Yeah. And interestingly, I consider Chris a good friend. I've never met him. We met through the Tightwad Tech podcast. He was a fan there. He began that's your story too, right, Dor? He was a fan of the show. He began contributing to the show in the forums and the chat room. I brought him on the show a couple of times, and now he's, you know, the anchor of the single biggest show. I mean, yes, it's the only one I'm doing right now, but it's been the biggest show on the network for a while now. And he did that, you know, the fans out there, this could be you. All you got to do is know your stuff and be personable and be persistent, and it works.
Yeah, kind of. I kind of stalked and harassed Steve, so it's kind of the same, yeah.
Eventually, he was like, fine, you can be on the show.
Yeah.
He was trying to show Steve up via voicemail, repetitive voicemails. And
yeah.
and then he laid down the gateway, or laid down the road for me, too. I thought, well, maybe if I start emailing and sending voicemails, I could be on a show, too. And then it happened, and then look where I am today. All because of you, Dor.
Yep, and now we have a gruel in place.
Yeah. Now, there's a much stricter review policy.
Right. Yeah, see, the most fiery revolutionary becomes a conservative the day after the revolution.
That's right.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. And to be honest, the person who I would feel utterly ashamed if we did not talk about is Seth. And I will say, when Seth opens his mouth, I just feel like I relate to him. His pain, his fun, his anguish, the things that dare I say, tickles his cockles, if such a thing actually exists.
I don't want to know what tickles his cockles, frankly.
It's just hilarious. I just really like hearing the guy, and he is the guy who you can tell when he's trying to be honest, but he doesn't want to be too honest. He just wants to be honest enough, and then you just hear him break. And then he's just like, no, it sucks. Yeah. He is the gooey kid, so he is the newcomer of the bunch?
More or less, yeah. He has less Linux experience. We had another guy on the show. His official title was Noob in Residence, and that's Aaron Butler. And he recently had to step away, just time constraints, as always happens. Seth, the reason he's on the show, I've known Seth for 25 years. We met actually in high school. We were roommates in college. And he's on the show for one reason, and it's what you just picked on. He's one of the best people I know. I frankly didn't care if he knew anything about Linux.
Exactly.
I wanted him on the show because he's a good guy.
Right.
And so he's the resident representative of the evil empire. He's a Windows guy. He's an MCSE by trade, and you know that's what he does. He's a Windows guy.
Well,
he's a Windows administrator.
I'll say he might be a Windows guy, but he's not a full-fledged storm like trooper, because he despises Windows 8.
Yes.
That's painfully obvious.
And so he's come along, and he worked for me for a while when I had an opportunity to hire him. Again, it's because I want to surround myself with good people. I didn't really care what his skill set was. I knew he was a good guy, and he was a great employee, and that was evidenced by the fact that a year with me, somebody else offered him twice the money, and he went somewhere else. He has come on the show, and his Linux development really began with me, working with me in my shop there where I worked, and then moving on and the show. He fires up Linux specifically for the show, and so he has a very fresh and honest perspective about it, and I like that about him.
Absolutely.
Very cool. All right. Well, yeah, so go to elementop.com and check out the variety of shows that are currently running and their back catalog, which I'm assuming is still available for download if they want to go and investigate it. Very cool. Very cool. And I knew that you were involved with the Tightwad Tech, and it just recently ended, and I had completely, the association was gone. So, and I listened to The Art of Podcasting as well, another great show. So, and I'm sure as a lot of tech stuff, you know, a lot of it's cyclical to a certain degree, so a lot of it is still relevant. You know, some stuff drops off, but I'm listening to, you know, some older podcasts right now, 5-6 years old, and it still rings true today. So definitely don't hesitate.
If you're in a situation where our sort of tagline was doing more with less, if you're asked to do more and more every day with less and less resources, the Tightwad Tech is the show for you. Yes, our focus was on education because that's what we did, but the tools, the techniques, the tightwad mentality, we referred to things as being tightwad approved or not, that will serve anybody in any line of work. One of our biggest fans works for a major pizza chain. He has nothing to do with education, but he's a tightwad, and so it speaks to him. So yeah, I stand behind every one of the, well, almost all of those episodes. Some of them, frankly, weren't very good. But it's good stuff out there, and I'm going to leave it out there. And even though, you know, I hope to get back to producing more along that line lately, it's one of those things where as I moved away from education, I became less and less relevant to that line of thought. I'm still a tightwad, and I'm still looking for my avenue there, but education just isn't my life anymore.
Yeah, I'll say working for the government, I'm a firm believer tightwad is going to become a necessity. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. It just has to.
And, you know, the irony is I moved from that to healthcare, where there's just money running out of every pore of every face of every executive. You need $50 million for this instant messaging system? Okay, go ahead. So it frankly upsets me, offends my tightwad sensibilities on a daily basis. I mean, I love what I do. I love who I do it for. But I look around and think, my gosh, this is why I pay so much when I go to the doctor. Actually, it's really the other way around. Because I pay so much when I go to the doctor, they can afford to do this.
You're right, exactly.
Right. And I will say that being a tightwad, that's one way of saying it. But if you really think about it, like, you can do a lot of the stuff that needs to be done, whether it's at home or at work, with a lot of the tech that you have around, if you put a little bit of elbow grease into it instead of simply throwing money at the problem to solve it.
Right.
So,
yeah, one of my hot button words is the word obsolete. We referred to computers as obsolete. There are very few computers, like a 386. I will call that obsolete.
Now.
Yeah, now, today. But 486s, no, you can still do some stuff with those things. You know, obsolete means it no longer does its job. Right, my refrigerator is 15 years old. My food's still cold. It's not the newest model, but it's not obsolete.
It doesn't have Android on it, but it keeps stuff cold.
Right.
Yeah, but you could tape an MK802 to it, and then it could technically be running Android.
True. yeah, and here's the one thing I will ask people, and Cody, I'm not calling you out. It just so happens it sounds like it. If you go back now and start listening to back episodes of Everyday Linux, and you're doing it at your computer, and you're really finding the things they're saying interesting, and you're actively looking them up, why not start an email, copy down those links that they're talking about, and when you're done, send Mark that email. Mark, off and on, very off, only every now and then on, ask for help with like doing notes. And if you're starting the back catalog, now would be a great time to start helping contribute to his back catalog of notes. I'm just saying, it's good for the network.
Yeah, show notes are sort of a sore subject in podcasting in general. My show notes for the Everyday Linux, you can go look and see it. It's one sentence and then a bunch of links for that came directly out of our show rundown. I don't put a lot of time and effort into detailing everything at 4:06 this happens and at 12:19 this happens. You know, there are people who do that. I've seen some of your notes. You have that. Awesome. That's great. I'm just never going to do that. It's just not within me to ever do that. We did have a fellow with the Taiwan Tech who said, I'll do that. I will listen to your show and I will freaking transcribe that thing and send it to you. And we're like, awesome. Go to town. He did about four episodes and said, this is hard. I'm not going to do this anymore. Right. And we said, I totally understand.
No problem.
Absolutely. So I do want to talk a little bit more, have a little bit of links we're going to bring up, but I wanted to ask you, Mark, is there anything that we didn't bring up? Is there anything that we didn't talk about that you would like to discuss?
Not really. I came here with no plans. You know, Dor sent me an email, asked me to be on the show. I replied back. Is there anything I want to that you want me to talk about or be planned about, or should I just get on and riff and do uninformed commentary like I usually do? And he said, do that. So that's what I'm here for.
Right.
Well, uninformed opinions.
Well, it's one stupid question because I didn't hear you say it. When you finally decided to do your Ubuntu challenge of 18 months, which version was that? Do you remember?
I started with that probably would have been 8.10 and went from there.
Gotcha. I think I want to say Eft or Feisty. I can never remember the number to name.
Of course, I upgraded every 6 months as it did. One of them was Hardy Heron. That I went through. I remember that one for a while. And then it was probably the before and the after of that one.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, back then, at least, it seemed to me, upgrading Ubuntu seemed utterly safe, utterly doable. I mean, I had no issues. I did it literally for like 4 years straight. I want to say 8 upgrades.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, we're going to bring up just a couple links. This is not going to be a 2-hour show. That's what I keep telling myself. I keep telling myself I'm not very successful.
You've got to tell me to shut up if you want a short show.
Well, I know you're not a fan of, let's say, alternate computing systems, but I did want to talk about this one. Chromebook. Me and Cody have Chromebooks. I mentioned something to him at NELF. And I told him a couple weeks later I was completely wrong. I said there was a way you could basically install and alt-tab back and forth between the Chrome OS and full Ubuntu with its own kernel. Because what I was finding was Ubuntu was actually using the Chrome kernel, which meant it was kind of limiting. There were certain things that were very difficult or very hard to do. Some things you just couldn't do. And I finally found the right article to this application service instance, whatever, called Crouton, C-R-O-U-T-O-N. and they give a nice versus the two, Crewbuntu and Crouton, telling you the examples. What Crouton allows you to do is to you run Ubuntu at the same time as you're running Chrome OS, and it's running in a truded virtualized environment. This was the holy grail I was looking for. With this, I could essentially run anything in that Ubuntu with no issues. I haven't had time to try it, play with it, but I will. I'm very sure of that. Now, if there was a reason to get more RAM in your Chromebook, this is now the reason. You kind of have to. Because just 2 gigs of RAM, I wouldn't expect it to run too good.
So, that being said, you haven't done it yourself yet?
Nope.
Okay.
I can't remember how long I found out about it. Life, work,
yep.
Kids,
yep.
Family, Mother's Day, allergies, sickness, kid strangled like Bart Simpson kind of thing, all ended up in me not having a chance to try this yet. But I wanted to mention it because I thought it was cool. And if one of the listeners out there has tried Crouton, please let us know your experience.
I haven't used Crouton myself, but I am aware of it. I think it was designed, if I remember correctly, specifically for the new Pixel. Because the Pixel, you know, it's real hardware, right. And can really do that sort of thing. The Samsung, you know, $200 Chromebook is probably going to choke on that.
I watched videos of it running on the Samsung, which is supposedly more powerful, and on the Acer, which is the quote unquote less powerful of it. Both of them had bumped up RAM. It didn't run bad because it was running XFCE, wasn't running, of course, Unity, because Unity sucks. And it ran respectable for a $200 device. I'd say, dare I say, good for a $200 device, but nothing like a, you know, $500, $600 laptop.
Well, trust me, I'm always looking for excuses or valid reasons to upgrade my hardware. So now I can go out and buy that extra 8 gigs of RAM and that SSD for my Chromebook. Make it a $500
machine. Help me out here, guys.
Okay, go ahead.
While we're on the subject, I need some guidance
okay.
from you guys. What's the point of having a beefed up Chromebook? Why not have a laptop that runs the Chrome browser? I don't get it.
Well, easy. I will answer. Well, go ahead, Dora. I'm sorry.
It ain't the same. I ran it. It's not the same. You cannot instantaneously revert it back to a base install. It does not have a guest account when you install it on a laptop. And the Chrome OS is perfect for someone who needs, dare I say, isolation in an environment with no distractions.
Well, let me say, coming from the public education environment where the Chromebook has been flogged heavily, I am very familiar with the product. In fact, I was on the beta team early on when they were first beta. We had a lab, not a lab, but a couple of them. So I know the product. I know the OS. I just don't get it.
Much to what Dor spoke of, I loved the fact that, yeah, it, and I was a bit skeptical too, but I bought one kind of on a whim with some Christmas money I had. And I found it that because it was a smaller form factor and that it was, I don't want to say limited in the environment, but it really did because of the other bells and whistles weren't there. You know, I wasn't able to open up like a graphics program or a different browser or get my chat up or, you know, all these other things that might hinder my productivity. I was able to do a lot of stuff. Like, I'll tell you, when I was using my Chromebook more heavily, I was getting a lot more research done, a lot more email done, because I was sort of locked into that environment. But the simple fact of what's the point in upgrading it? Well, what's the point in putting a PCI card in a 98 laptop? You know what I mean? It's because you can. You know, what's the point of putting, you know, a spoiler on an 82 Datsun sedan? Because you can. It's
because chicks dig it.
Well, that's why I put flame stickers on my Acer. But what I will say is that you can you can upgrade the Acer much easier than the Samsung. It's cheaper at $199 versus $249, about to be bumped up in retail price because of some upgrades, one of which being RAM, which I understand. But also the hackability factor of the Acer versus the Samsung was much greater. And I haven't even done any of that yet, and it's still a great machine. The fact that I know that I can go above and beyond and do these modifications to it, it adds a whole other possible element for me. And that's why I chose it. I don't carry my regular laptop with me anymore. I just carry my Chromebook because I figure when I'm on the go, because I don't do any like on-site tech stuff anymore, I just use that for basic everyday things. Any more advanced stuff I can usually just do with my phone because I don't need anything else at the time. So, yeah.
So what you've just described to me, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to hijack your show, honestly.
No.
Is it sounds like you've described a tertiary machine. Your phone is your secondary machine. Your laptop, your desktop is your primary. Then, if you got a couple hundred extra bucks, you throw a Chromebook in.
Well, I'll say, we're talking about it from the personal perspective. It's a great little hacking device. And if it is someone's primary device, they have serious issues. I will say that.
Well, not only serious issues, but here's the thing. Like my father, you know, he's in his 70s. He literally just needs a machine right now where he can web surf and check email. And he can go and spend, you know, like a low-end $429, $479 and get like a Dell, you know, desktop because he doesn't want a laptop. Or hopefully at Google I.O. in the next 3 or 4 days, they're going to finally announce a Chrome box, which they've alluded to the past year. And I can buy a little, you know, sub $200 device, plug it into his LCD, his existing LCD keyboard and mouse, and give him a fully functional machine for what he needs. But Mark does bring up a great point. Yes, as for someone of ours, I don't want to say status, but from someone sort of immersed in tech, would it be a great primary device? No, it just won't because it's not going to serve all those needs. Yes, it's sort of pompous, like in the way that, you know, first world will say, oh well, you know, we get appetizers and dessert, but yet we have our main meal as well because we can not only we have the bodies to sustain the food, but we can afford it. Whereas you people, you're just, you know, happy to get rice. Well, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, if you happen to have that expendable income or are looking for something to fill a need that where you're not, because here's one thing about laptops. Anything over 15 inches is just ridiculous as far as mobile. Like a 15-inch laptop is just ridiculous for me to carry around anyway. It's like a lunch tray. 17 inches, you're out of your mind. And these 19-inch, like, you know, Alienwares, you know, you might as well put, like, you know, wheels on it and just ride it to work to get more value out of those things. It's just insane. But 13, 12, and 11-inch laptops now, or at least mobile devices, for me, it's a win-win because it's a lighter device, much power consumption, the battery life is better. And if you think about what you need to do, what you personally need to do day-to-day, on the go, can it be done with a cheaper, smaller, faster device rather than carrying around your primary, possibly risking getting damaged or stolen? If you can afford it, do it.
Yeah, and I'll say the business side, I'll say it's almost designed like this on purpose, I'll say. Onto itself, it's useless. In a school, in an enterprise, or any place else, it is quite literally a useless device. But in tandem with other things, I think it has a benefit. And what I mean is it's cheap, near disposable, so if someone breaks it, loses it, not that big of a deal. Data shouldn't be on it anyway, even though they do have some space on it. Stuff is in the quote-unquote cloud. If you're a school and you get Google apps for free, I think that's a combination that some people find alluring. I know there is some level of management you can do.
It's pretty darn impressive. There's a lot of management you can do.
Gotcha. So I think in that kind of atmosphere, it isn't the Chromebook they're after. They're after a quote-unquote solution. And I don't know if this is a good one or not.
We'll just have to wait and see. But yeah, that's why Dora and I and many other people really do cherish these devices. I will say cherish because it really has brought a whole, I don't want to say a whole other level, but it's opened my eyes to what I can do with less by spending more, I guess, is the way to put it.
Yeah, and I'll say I just got it because I knew I could hack on it. If I can hack on it, I'll buy it.
I got it for those 11 free in flight Wi-Fi sessions, and let me tell you, those are terrible and not worth the money whatsoever. At least on American Airlines. We'll see.
Yeah, well, something tells me they were almost equivalent to the free Wi-Fi I had on the bus on the way up to Boston.
Oh, jeez.
Useless and worthless. You put a link in here about Debian, Cody?
Yes. Whenever you see a new distro or a new release for a distro, you know, we've all seen it with a lot of the Ubuntu releases lately and Fedora and OpenSUSE. There's always kind of a, hey, 10 things to do after you install it. However, with the Debian, the full releases being so few and far between as compared to other cycles, I hadn't really gone through and read a, you know, what to do after you install Debian type of suggestion list. And I found one for Wheezy because it just came out, I believe, on the 5th or 6th, so not even 2 weeks. But we have a great link in the show notes from unixmen.com on getting started or getting Debian Wheezy up and running. Whether it be adding extra packages for what you may need to do, getting certain drivers you might need. And for those noobs, possibly, and well, for anybody maybe feeling a little bit left behind by some of the changes from Ubuntu or maybe using a couple distros and not really sure where to go next and maybe want to, you know, go back to sort of the nice Debian feel because they've heard about it but they don't really know what it is and they're comfortable using an environment that, like Mint, that, you know, has all those things sorted out for them ahead of time, this would be a great companion for those people.
Yeah, and I'll say that's the best and the worst thing about Debian. It doesn't get updated often. You know, that's what makes it stable, but then when it comes time to update, you got to do something. So it's like the body in motion tends to stay in motion, the body at rest tends to stay at rest. Well, Debian is at rest for a long time, and then they expect you to start into motion. So you got to really be on your game. And this is the kind of information people definitely have to have or they will have a very painful experience.
Yeah. So, yeah, I saw this article and thought it would benefit those people. So I definitely wanted to include it because I'll be installing it in a couple weeks after I try Triskel, as I committed to you on the last episode. So, yeah.
Very cool. This was one article I had to bring. This is my old man coming out. The get off my lawn, these new desktops suck, why change kind of mentality. And it's a link over at PC World. And it's titled, If It Ain't Broke, Don't Fix It. Ancient Computers in Use Today. And what it basically is a company in Texas that is one of the world's leading, I want to say, it's a bio something. They do something with chemicals and stuff that I don't understand. But they're using a computer system from 1948. And they've been using it since 1948. I'll say newer isn't always better. Older isn't always better either. And like I said about people not wanting to change their workflow, here's a perfect example of a company that is hell-bent against changing their workflow.
65 years old. Wow.
Yep. With cards with the hole punches in them, you got to put in the machine to like reprogram it and to get information out. Yeah. You show this to probably half of the audience of this show, and they'll think it's like a piece of fake computing out of a old movie.
Yeah, it's been around so long, it's become steampunk.
Exactly.
Is that why all those hipsters are in that one photo?
Exactly.
Okay.
I just thought this was fantastic, and I just had to bring it. When some people say they don't want to change, maybe we shouldn't say they have to change. I'm just saying. Yeah. If punch cards still work, well, then they still work.
It does sort of, when I think of some of my friends, you know, like they will upgrade their machines just because they bought their last one so long ago. It's not, Yeah, you know, like a year or 6 months, or, oh, my video card's not up to date. Well, when did you buy it? Oh, I bought it 4 months ago. It's like, well, what's wrong with it? Oh, nothing. I just have to have better. You know, the whole mentality, like what I was speaking to earlier, throw money at a problem. Well, is it really a problem, or is it just you right. wanting, you know, trying to keep up with the Joneses?
Yeah, I'll just say I definitely don't have that problem.
Yeah, me either.
For people like that, if anybody listening to the show, I will give you my address. Send your old stuff to me.
Right.
If it's only 4 months old, I'll take it and run it for another 11 years in 4 months.
There you go.
Exactly. this next one I wanted to bring just as a quick mention. I think it's pronounced Spospat. I don't know. It's a abbreviation, Single Purpose Operating System Kpatience. It's basically turning a computer into a unitasking device. If I could do this with the right card game, my wife would be happy with her computer. I'll just say that. This looks like it's playing solitaire. They call it Kpatience, but looks like solitaire to me. It's a single download of an ISO file. It's small. I can't recall the exact size of it. But you basically download the ISO file, boot to it. It runs completely in RAM, so you can take the disk out after it boots. And only thing your computer will do is play Patience.
Says it needs 512 megs on a USB stick. And it runs in RAM, shuts everything down. The feature is no internet connection.
So when the Boris Bach PCMCIA slot finally decides to go,
that's right,
you'll have a use for it. Yeah.
Well, no, I would say, I mean, that's maybe another 10 years down the line. When the current card dies, he can always get like the USB 3 card, you know, just to, you know, get a little more functionality for it.
I've replaced the power brick on it twice. Yeah.
Nice.
Very cool. So that was something I just had to bring up just because I like unitasking near-dead equipment. And I've had near-dead equipment here recently, I'll say. One is now my oldest son's Minecraft terminal. Mm-hmm. And he's happy. Quite happy.
Very cool. All right. And on our last episode, I mentioned a new Humble bundle, the Humble Double Fine bundle. Today, they received an update. They added 8 more games to it if you meet the minimum. Now, in past bundles, I've seen them add like a game and a soundtrack or a couple games, but I've never seen them release 8 additional games. Now, they are 8 betas, to be fair, but right now, let me double check here what the minimum is. The minimum is $8.18. So for less than $9, you're going to get 4 full games, 4 full soundtracks, and then 8 beta games. It's just, it's crazy how, I mean, we've spoken at length about how great of a deal it is already. But the fact that you could put this money where you want as far from 4 different sources on the site and get this much content is just insane. Still, you can get to $35 or more. You will also be included in the Broken Age Backer access, which is the Double Fine's new game, which I read an article online. It looks beautiful. So check that out. Or if you do $70 or more, you get all of that and a limited edition shirt from Double Fine. So lots of different options available there. If you were teetering on the fence from what I talked about in the last episode, now you have 8 more reasons to just give your money. At least $8.18 as of today, the 14th of May. But yeah, a great deal. Definitely check it out. I bought mine already last week and I went over the average, so I get these again. I mean, I get these as well, so I'm very happy.
Well, this comes with one disclaimer. The 8 games are, I believe, Windows-only games.
Windows-only for now. Yeah,
that was what I couldn't find out clearly, at least. Mm-hmm. They're Windows now. Are you only getting these, or are you getting these and updates? And that's what I couldn't figure it out.
worst case scenario, you can run them in a VM. I mean, it's just icing on the cake at this point. Like, Brutal Legend, the original game that you got for beating the average, is worth way more than the average right now anyway. And the fact you're getting Psychonauts and costume quest and stacking. But yeah, if for some reason you have a Windows box, or if you were gifting this to someone, they had a Windows box. It's just, I mean, it's just, yeah, eight more reasons. Plus, yeah, if they end up getting Linux licenses for them later, or if they're Windows, or if they're Steam keys, you can eventually use on a Linux box once they actually add it to Steam. That's possible.
True.
Yeah. So yeah, check it out at humblebundle.com. Okay. Well, that's the end of our links. Mark, thank you so much for being on the show. Any additional plugs you'd like to give out?
Elementopi.com. Everything I do is right there. You can find me on Google Plus if you do a search. I don't know, Mark Cockrell. I'm sure there's 100 of them. Just Elementopi. Just go there. That's where I live. That's my world. Thanks for having me on, guys. It's been a pleasure. I've had fun, and I hope I didn't try to take over too much.
No.
Not at
all. Trust me. The main reason I invited you on was because I wanted you to talk. Not just to sit there and, you know, breathe into the mic or anything. I wanted you to actually talk. Trust me when I say you will be reinvited. I don't know when, because I'm the most disorganized person I think I've ever met.
Well, Mark, as someone who's helping with the organization, when his guilt level rises as the fact that you still are the better man than he is for inviting him on your show twice as versus his one invitation here, we'll get you back on as soon as we possibly can.
I invited him on an episode of The Art of Podcasting once too. He refused, mainly because I invited him like 8 minutes before the show started. We were talking in the chat room. I said, "Hey, want to come be on the show?" So, I count that as three.
I can't remember. I'll blame the wife on that.
Oh, okay. All right.
Because I can't. I can't remember nothing. And I said two, but in my horrible memory, he could have actually had me on three shows, and I wouldn't know.
I honestly don't remember. I think it's two, but I don't keep track.
Mm. Gotcha.
Well, remember, we're all brothers now, so we can visit each other whenever we can. And man, we should cherish these times, because they're going to be few and far between.
Well, I'll be flying over Mark here in about 2 weeks, and I'll wave when I'm going over top of Georgia.
There you go.
If you're flying anywhere in the country on Delta, you're going to stop in Atlanta. So, you know, if you're there, give me a call. We'll have lunch.
Cool. That might be the airline, that Dora might use to get to fly to Scale 2014. So we'll see.
Yep, we'll see. Yep.
It's a running joke. He still thinks he's not going, but he is. At least that's what I'm trying to convince him for. Dora, where can we find you week to week, day to day, minute to minute?
Just podnuts.com, podnuts.com/forums, podnuts.com/lounge, and podnuts.com/contact. It's really easy to just stop by there. And I will ask people this one favor. If you do go to Element OP and you do subscribe to any of his podcasts, just ding him. Let him know you're there. Let him know how he's doing. Feedback is vital for podcasters.
Yeah, and you said something earlier that I was going to jump off on, but I forgot. There's not a zero-sum game in the world of podcasting. There's plenty of room for lots of players in there, so I'm happy to steal some of your audience, and you're welcome to steal all of my audience. That's perfectly fine.
Very cool, and thanks for playing my voicemails, because I've sent Mark voicemails too.
He is the number one voicemail contributor to the Everyday to the Element OP network in general.
Oh, wow.
Very cool.
Okay. And I want to apologize to the listeners. I told you guys I would commit to doing email or voicemail every show. It's not going to happen this week. I have gotten quite a few good responses lately, one of which, and this is my shout out to the week, and it'll be my shout out of the week next week too because of his awesome email, Peter Bukowitz. This guy, Dor, let's just put it this way. This guy sent an email that you won't read because it's that long. But It's mm-hmm. long in a way that it was almost, I don't want to say a puzzle, but it was challenging. Like when I saw it in my inbox and I opened it up for the first time, I got giddy because I love dissecting those. And he has questions upon questions in those, and I'm going to basically condense it down into a format we can bring it on the show without devoting an entire show to it. And that,
thank you. I will put an increase in your pay there, in the works.
I expect it to show up in my direct deposit next week, sir. Peter, we are, and Ryan Ridenour also sent in a voice, and we'll be addressing all of those next week and get completely caught up. I appreciate your patience. As always, we're still looking for guests to come on to Podnuts Daily. If you're a technician or business owner in the computer-related field, would like to come on and talk about not only your day-to-day, but perhaps the tools, share some customer service stories, anything involved with being a repair tech, please contact me at cody@podnuts.com, and I will send you a list of available dates, and we will get you on that show. If you have any comments for this show, Linux the Rest of Us, please email us at podcast@linuxtherestofus.com, and your voice will be heard. Also, send in any voicemails to 7076-PODNUT. That's 7076-PODNUT. We will play those on the show. Please don't forget to check out our good friend Jonathan Nato over at theacf.co. That's the Accessible Computing Foundation, bringing software to those who might have otherwise been left behind with disabilities, ranging from blindness to low mobility, all sorts of other ailments. He has specific distro that he made, Sonar, he has a lot of software which helps address those issues and helps put computers in the hands of these people who would otherwise have been left behind. So please check him out. For as little as $2 a month at theacf.co, you can become a regular contributor and helping that organization doing everything that they do day to day. Finally, check out our PodNuts links at podnuts.com/Amazon or /Newegg or /eBay for any purchases that you might already be making. You can use those links and benefit the network with stuff you were going to be buying anyway. We would deeply appreciate it. I am Cody Cooper. You can hit me up on Google Plus at just search for me, Cody Cooper. And I thank you for everyone who's added me the last couple weeks. I've had quite a few of you. Haven't quite got back to you yet, but with Mother's Day weekend, it was nuts. So I'll be hitting you guys up individually from there like I always do, and don't hesitate to ask me any questions anytime. I'll get back to you as soon as I possibly can. Thank you for listening, and remember, Linux is not just for the rest of us, it is for all of us. Good night.